Coast Salish peoples.
Hello and welcome to Viewpoints. I'm Boris Chassaigne. I'll be with you for the next half hour. On today's show, in Ontario, a local foster care organization calls for caregivers amid a shortage of homes.
Kids' culture and identity is extremely important, and it is a value of ours to make sure that we are making our best efforts to maintain cultural connection, connection to community, adhering to traditions.
The Higgs government review of gender diversity and inclusion policy in schools prompts a backlash in New Brunswick.
The premier characterized the teachers' work, and this is a quote, as purposefully hiding information from parents. And I think that does a disservice to the teachers who find themselves as confidants to kids who are wrestling with their identity.
The Old Strathcona Farmers Market celebrates 40 years in Edmonton, Alberta.
We want to change the building. Instead of the Old Strathcona Farmers Market, we'll call it the Old Strathcona Farmers Market Community Hub. People will always have something to do when they come by the Old Strathcona Farmers Market Hub.
A couple of scientists are trying to resolve the Great Tantramar Turtle Mystery in the Sackville area, and we'll be gazing at the sky for World Migratory Bird Day.
So Peterborough is a great birding spot. Right now, we can see almost anything. We get to see the warblers going by. We get to see a whole bunch of sparrows. We get to see other gulls also going by.
Welcome to Viewpoints.
Local news nationwide.
Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.
Welcome, glad to have you with us. We start off by gazing at the sky and will then get our feet wet. Close to 60 local outdoor educators and bird enthusiasts gathered in Ontario to celebrate World Migratory Bird Day on May 13th. The day's celebrations and events were led by members of the Creator's Garden and began with a dawn chorus where attendants listened to bird calls and songs at sunrise. The dawn chorus was followed by guided bird walks. All of the events were led by the members of the Creator's Garden Birds, who brought an Anishinaabe perspective to this international celebration. Their project is to gather the Anishinaabe Mohwin names for as many local birds as possible. One of our newest collaborators, Edward Sweeney, posted in Peterborough, Ontario, did not sleep in that morning. Instead, he got up early to bring this story back to us.
Over 50 bird lovers gathered at Kawartha Land Trust's Ballyduff Trails at sunrise on Saturday morning to celebrate World Migratory Bird Day.
I think it's important to recognize this day because one of the greatest natural phenomena is happening, and that's the return of the birds to North America. Birds migrate, some of them short distances to the U.S., others very long distances to La Patagonia, like bobolinks, and they all return to this area for breeding. And I think it's really important to celebrate that event because we need to keep suitable environments for birds to be able to do a journey that they've done for millions of years.
That was Andreas Jimenez Mohe, a member of a group called Creator's Garden Birds. Kawartha Land Trust, in collaboration with Creator's Garden Birds, hosted events for participants to see, hear, and learn about the birds currently migrating to and through our area.
So Peterborough is a great birding spot. Right now, we can see almost anything. We get to see the warblers going by. We get to see a whole bunch of sparrows. We get to see other gulls also going by. We get to see shorebirds, and it depends on the habitat you're in. Of course, if you're close to the water, you will see shorebirds, but if you're in the forest, then you will see the woodland species. And it's a great time to find anything. Like, anything could turn up, and it only happens for 2-3 weeks as they make their way up into the tundra and the boreal forest to look for their breeding grounds.
Creator's Garden Birds is a division of a larger project called Creator's Garden. Founded by Joe Pitawanakwat, Creator's Garden is dedicated to learning and sharing Anishinaabe knowledge. Creator's Garden Birds, its division specializing in birds, consists of Joe Pitawanakwat, an Indigenous outdoor educator, Andreas Jimenez Mohe, a biologist, and Junaid Shahzad Khan, an ecologist. Together, they use their diverse backgrounds to combine Anishinaabe teachings with Western sciences, as demonstrated in Saturday's events.
So today we had a dawn chorus, but it was a dawn chorus with a twist. we were talking about Anishinaabemowin bird names in indigenous languages. And we were listening to the birds, a crowd of like 60 people joined us to listen to the early birds calling in the morning as they prepare for the day. And then we're going to have three guided walks in which we're going to be digging into the species that we see, but also into the Anishinaabemowin names and the information that they codify.
Throughout the dawn chorus, participants were given silent moments to observe the migratory birds around them, only being interrupted by excitement following calls and songs of rare birds.
Oh, look at you!
That's the blue-winged warbler.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah.
Is that what I heard?
Yeah, the blue-winged warbler.
Yeah.
I recognize this.
Did you hear it?
In addition to identifying which birds were heard, several of the local species have known Anishinaabemowin names and stories to go along with them. After hearing a local woodpecker, the yellow-bellied sapsucker, Joe told one of these stories.
But we have a story for the yellow-bellied sapsucker.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hey, this one's real cool. So, yellow-bellied sapsucker, it's when you're looking at Anishinaabe bird name, when you ask what are woodpeckers, everyone says bapaka. It's woodpeckers. And that word is just describing their pounding. Bapa is to pound on something. So obviously the woodpecker. But that's a family name. And so it takes a lot of work for me to tease out all of the... Because each individual woodpecker has its own name that describes a unique characteristic of that and only that woodpecker. Bapa says the family of them. And we knew this right away because there was one very famous one, it's the northern flicker, and we call those Mooningwane.
The Anishinaabemowin name for the woodpecker is only one of many. In fact, Joe and Creators Garden Birds have collected nearly 200 Anishinaabe names for birds through work that has been done for over a decade. Joe travels to indigenous communities across Ontario, sometimes further across Canada and even North America, looking for people who have knowledge related to their local birds. According to the Creators Garden's website, Joe has learned from hundreds of traditional knowledge holders. Kawartha Land Trust and Creators Garden Birds have brought a unique local perspective to an international celebration. After the dawn chorus, I spoke to Lauren Yant, a participant of the day's events, and the same person who identified the yellow-bellied sapsucker earlier.
I am here because I love birds, and I also love being around other people that love birds, and I think it's really cool to be around people who are trying to strengthen their relationship with the outdoors. I think it's great that Kawartha Land Trust is holding events like this because I think it's really important that people further their connection with our environment around us, because birds are our neighbors, they're part of our community, and we should remember that they're there in moments like this morning. It was just a nice reminder that they're all around us and we should remember that.
This has been Eddie Sweeney reporting for the Local Journalism Initiative.
Hi, I'm Pamela Hassan in Smithers, BC, and you are listening to Viewpoints.
Scientists are trying to resolve the great Tantramar turtle mystery, hoping to find out if there are turtles still swimming around Sackville's Tantramar region in New Brunswick. Recent Mount Allison grads Isaac Aker and Alexia McCormick are setting up traps around the Sackville Waterfowl Park in hopes of catching and documenting the presence of the aquatic reptiles. They say there's currently a lack of scientific information regarding the presence of turtles in the area. The hope is to find some populations of snapping and or painted turtles in the region, even if they do expect the populations to be pretty low just based on the few sightings reported. The traps themselves are cylindrical floating nets that lure turtles with nice stinky sardines, says Acker. Both scientists will be checking traps daily. More on this with Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick.
My name's Alexia. I am a recent graduate and research assistant on the Tantramar Turtle Mystery Project.
And good day, my name's Isaac Acker. I'm a recent graduate from Mount Allison University in biology, and I'm a research tech here at Mount Allison University researching on the Turtle Gap in New Brunswick.
Okay, turtle mystery, Turtle Gap. What is the story here, folks?
There is currently a lack of scientific information regarding the presence of turtles in the Sackville-Tantramar area. And so we are hoping to gain knowledge from community members in the Sackville-Tantramar area to help us basically find turtles in the area to kind of close the gap.
Okay, so these you've got these traps in the water here. We're looking at one here by the Doncaster Bridge in the Sackville Waterfowl Park. Can you explain how these contraptions work?
Yeah, so basically these contraptions work similar to an eel trap where we have a bait, and they're oftentimes nice stinky sardines, which attract the turtles into the trap to the point where they can't find their way out, almost like a lobster trap. And therefore, they sit there, and we come and check these traps every day, and therefore able to find turtles, if they are here, which come from far and wide as they are attracted by the stinky fish.
What are your expectations in terms of the turtle population around here?
So we expect the population to be pretty low, just based on there being limited sightings around. But we do hope that there is hopefully a population of snapping turtles around, although potentially pretty small and having a lot of older individuals. We also hope to potentially find some painted turtles out in the less explored ponds around this town.
Are you looking for them anywhere else besides the waterfowl park?
Yes, so we have at least 10 different water systems we are looking throughout Sackville for these turtles, such as the close lake here and several of the drainage rivers which flow into the Bay of Fundy.
Okay. What's the status of these turtles? I know the painted turtle, there's not a lot of them around.
Yeah, so recently in Nova Scotia, right next to us, the painted turtle and snapping turtle have actually just been moved up in ranks as there become less turtles around. And it is relatively unknown what the rank is of the turtles around Sackville, such as the painted and snapping turtle, as there has been almost no studies done on them, although they are present in parts of western New Brunswick, such as around Fredericton.
So when you say the rank moved up, is that good or bad? What do you mean there?
That is bad. So that would be like a turtle going from near threatened to endangered, which they are right now in Nova Scotia with all three of their turtle species there. And we could see this potentially happening here as well. So that's why we wanted to see if these turtles are actually present here so that we can help further protect them as they're starting to do in Nova Scotia.
I guess you're saying there's a data gap. So we don't even know historically, I guess, if, you know, 20, 30, 40, 100 years ago, if there was turtles around here.
Yeah, so we only have information on that from community members. So we have people reaching out telling us that they have seen a turtle at Silver Lake or at the Waterfowl Park, but there's no scientific knowledge really regarding the history of their presence or current information on their presence.
They are like one of the important species for marshland habitat, and that's what we want to see if they're actually here, because they can help with stuff like removing carrion from the bottom of the riverbed. They can also help with stopping invasive species like goldfish, which are oftentimes present around marshlands which are close to human settlements. So we're hoping that if their turtles are here, we find them, are able to help and see how the marshland recovers from initially being built, and hope to see this major species, the turtle, present here, while also seeing that maybe some turtles have come into the waterfowl park since its creation, because they are mainly fully aquatic species and require water for most of their daily tasks, especially with the painted and the snapping turtle.
If there are turtles here, then that's actually a sign of health in this marsh?
Yeah, so it's one of the better signs of health in the marsh to have active reptiles here, such as the turtles, which are oftentimes a larger predator in the area. And with them being present here, it means that there's a large enough food quantity, stuff like insects, fish, and amphibians, for them to be able to exist here, which shows the marsh is really healthy.
So you mentioned that you're reaching out to local residents to gather info. So, like, what kind of information are you looking for?
We're basically just asking them if they have ever seen a turtle in the Sackville or Tantramar area. You know, what type of turtle, if they know. The location of it, and then we're looking to get permission to access the area that...
Someone commented on Facebook with us, saying that he had once seen a painted turtle here 30 years ago. So they could be here, they might not be, but we have to go out and look to see if they're actually here. So we've heard quite a bit about a couple of potential turtles in around Silver Lake, which we are happy to go look at. And just that there's been, back in like 50 years ago, people used to see a lot of turtles around, and that recently they haven't. So we kind of want to see if those turtle populations are still here or not. But we're always open to suggestions from the community members to where they've seen these adorable little turtles.
If people see one, they should, I'm guessing, take pics, take a note of the area, but not touch it or disturb it, right?
Yeah, so basically what we're asking is if you do see a turtle around Sackville or Tantramar area, just email our lab at imacker@mta.ca, and we will definitely look into those sightings, as it would generally help us to be able to understand how these turtle populations are doing in Tantramar and see if the university and the government can do anything to help them.
That's Isaac Acker and Alexia McCormick, Mount Allison researchers, speaking from the Doncaster Bridge in the Sackville Waterfowl Park, current site of one of their turtle traps. The pair say they will move the traps around and will be responding to feedback from the public about where turtles may be living in the Tantramar region. The project goes until September.
Hi, I'm Sarah Gouda in Halifax, Nova Scotia. You are tuned to Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories online at canada-info.ca and follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI.
The Old Strathcona Farmers Market, located in Edmonton, Alberta, is getting ready for a facelift as it prepares to celebrate its 40th anniversary with new installations and business model. The market has been serving Edmontonians since 1983 in a parking lot on the corner of 83rd Avenue and 103rd Street. Back then, it was an outdoor market with only 10 to 15 vendors. In 1986, the market moved inside the historic Edmonton Bus Barns, where it is housed to this day and operated on Saturdays. With the goal of completing renovations by early 2024, the market is looking to incorporate more elements to provide locals and tourists with an experience that goes beyond a regular farmer's market. Keith Purceau, the market's manager, thinks that after 40 years, it's time for them to be more involved in the community by opening the market 7 days a week. Details with Ryan Hunt in Edmonton, Alberta.
The Old Strathcona Farmers Market is gearing up for renovations to revitalize their way of operation. Keith Purceau, the Old Strathcona Farmers Market manager, spoke with Windspeaker Radio Network about the vision he has for the market moving into the future.
After 40 years, for us to be more involved with the community, we would like to open the building 7 days a week. However, of course, our vendors in the market who make it, bake it, and grow it, of course, they can't do that 7 days a week. So what we've decided to do is open the market once renovations complete on a Friday and a Saturday. For now, the public will tell us if they want more and if we can do more. But we want to change the building instead of the Old Strathcona Farmers Market. We'll call it the Old Strathcona Farmers Market Community Hub. We'll have a general store in the building. We'll have a cafe up in front so people can come in and have breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We'll have international markets, cooking classes, concerts, recitals. It'll be an events hub. People will always have something to do when they come by the Old Strathcona Farmers Market Hub, and that's the plan.
Purceau went through the things that are being done with the historic building to make sure the revitalization process goes through flawlessly.
Our architect firm and our contractors are busy poking holes into the ceiling to look at structural loads and weights, because we have to get a number. And then after that, we'll do the finalizing of the plans. Then we have to go get funding. We hope that it can be around a $6-7 million mark. We're looking at 2024.
According to Purceau, the market saw 360,000 people walk through their doors last year. The market has always provided lots of great things to the community since the beginning, 40 years ago. Purceau believes that these revitalizations will help the community and the city as a whole even more.
You take 360,000 people, you double that, and then add a bit more for other events. We think we can bring close to 1 million people a year into this area. That's got to benefit small businesses in the area, and it becomes a thing for the city of Edmonton, bigger than what the market is.
For Windspeaker Radio Network, I'm Ryan Hunt.
You are tuned to Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories online at canada-info.ca and follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI.
Family and Child Services of Guelph and Wellington County recently took to social media to share an urgent call for foster caregivers in the area. The FCSGW is counting on the community to fill in the gaps. More on this with Riley Gillespie-Wilson and Fergus, Ontario.
In the post, they stated they're, quote, calling upon our incredible community to help support our urgent need for foster homes. The announcement stated foster homes can't accommodate an increasing need and that foster caregivers will help rectify that issue. According to the latest annual report from FCSGW, 163 youth were in care in this region over the last year, and 82 required continued care and support. Daria Allen Ebron, Executive Director of Family and Children's Services Guelph Wellington, says foster caregivers play an instrumental role when children are facing challenging times in their lives. She believes keeping children connected with both siblings and their community is of the utmost importance.
It's always our intention to keep families at home with their caregivers and when not possible to have them remain in the community with extended family or community caregivers. And when that's not possible, then we do look to foster caregivers to be able to provide help and support.
Allen Ebron maintains when pairing children with foster caregivers, cultural connection is a big focus.
Kids' culture and identity is extremely important, and it is a value of ours to make sure that we are making our best efforts to maintain cultural connection, connection to community, adhering to traditions, customs, religion, as we look to support children and youth who may need to come into foster care.
No previous experience is required, only willingness, according to the social media post. And Allen Ebron added that one can become a foster caregiver even as a single or working person. She says these individuals support children not just physically, but emotionally as well. To learn more about becoming a foster parent or to register, head to the FCSGW website. Reporting for The Grand at 101, I'm Riley Gillespie-Wilson.
Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.
News that the Higgs government is reviewing its policy on sexual orientation and gender identity in schools has generated controversy in New Brunswick. The review of Policy 713 flared up in the New Brunswick legislature on May 13th, the International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, and Transphobia. New Brunswick's Policy 713, which came into effect in 2020, is meant to set up minimum requirements to create safe environments for LGBTQ plus students in schools. The Department of Education has said the review will look in part at whether schools should inform parents if their children under 16 wants to use a different name or pronoun. Premier Higgs has said schools should have the obligation to pass that information to parents. Critics have warned that this could put the safety of queer and trans children at risk. In Sackville, New Brunswick, here's David Gordon Kosh speaking with Patricia Kelly-Spurls, a professor at Mount Allison University, who's concerned about the review, not only as an educator, but also as the parent of a child who came out as trans a few years ago.
I've been, you know, involved from an academic perspective in issues relating to gender, you know, pretty much all my career, so like 25 years. And then maybe 4 years ago, one of my kids came out as trans. There's really good scholarship that shows that that children benefit, you know, in a measurable way, like in a quantified way, from having their chosen name and correct pronouns used at home in their family, at school, by teachers, you know, and I think that recognition of the full humanity of children, you know, and the pain that they experience when, you know, they're not treated with respect and they're, you know, the anguish that some of these kids have as a result of, you know, trying to force themselves into gender boxes that adults think are appropriate for them. you know, I think it's really important to recognize that and take it seriously. The thing that's really important for me is that people recognize that using an individual's correct pronouns and chosen name, like that has a real measurable impact on their mental health.
And the Legislative Assembly Higgs defended his approach to the issue during question period, suggesting it's a matter of the rights of parents and that students can have private conversations with school counselors. And the Minister of Education, Bill Hogan, has also said the review will look at the process for team sports selection and participation and age appropriateness of sex ed, although the policy doesn't cover the curriculum. And as a compliment to this story before we close up shop today, you can take a peek of what our French counterparts have been working on for the International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, and Transphobia. That can be found on episode 68 of Point de Vue at canada-info.ca. As we know, many of you are bilingual.
Ontario. You are tuned to Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories online at canada-info.ca and follow us on Twitter at CanadaLGI.
And this concludes this edition of Viewpoints. Our reporters this week were Riley Gillespie-Wilson, Ryan Hunt, Erica Butler, Edward Sweeney, and David Gordon Kosh. National coordinators Victoria Fenner and Maureen McEwen. Viewpoints is produced by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, broadcast on your local radio station and online at canada-info.ca. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassagne. It was great to have you with us. Until next week, ciao.
And follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI.